Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, text number 26. Kama Krodha Vimuktanam Yatinam Yata Chetasam Abhito Brahma Nirvanam Partite Viditatmanam. Kama, from desires, krodha, and anger, vimuktanam, of those who are liberated, yatinam, of the saintly persons, yatachetasam, who have full control over the mind, Abhitaha, short in the near future, Brahma Nirvanam, liberation in the Supreme. Bhartate is there. Vidita Atmanam, of those who are self-realized. Translation purport by Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-disciplined, and constantly endeavoring for perfection, are assured of liberation of the Supreme in the very near future. Purport. Of the saintly persons who are constantly engaged in striving towards salvation, one who is in Krishna consciousness is the best of all. The Bhagavatam 4.22.39 confirms this as follows. Yat pada pankaja palasa vilasa bhaktya kama shrayam grahitam udgratayanti shanta tavan narikta matiyo yatiyo piruda shroto gatas tamarunam bhajavasudevam. Just try to worship in devotional service Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even great sages are not able to control the forces of the senses as effectively as those who are engaged in transcendental bliss by serving the lotus feet of the Lord, uprooting the deep-grown desire for fruitive activities. In the conditioned soul, the desire to enjoy fruitive results of work is so deep-rooted that it is very difficult even for the great sages to control such desires, despite great endeavors. A devotee of the Lord constantly engaged in devotional service in Krishna consciousness, perfect in self-realization, very quickly attains liberation of the Supreme. Owing to his complete knowledge and self-realization, he always remains in trance. To cite an analogous example of this, Darshana Dhyana Samsparshar Matsya Korma Vihangama Swantya Patyani Pushnanti Tataham Api Padmaja. By vision, by meditation, and by touch, only did the fish, the tortoise, and the birds maintain their offspring. Similarly do I also, O Padmaja. The fish bring up its offspring simply by looking at them. The tortoise brings up its offspring simply by meditation. The eggs of the tortoise are laid on the land. The tortoise meditates on the eggs while in the water. Pretty powerful meditation. Similarly, the devotee in Krishna consciousness, although far away from the Lord's abode, can elevate himself to that abode simply by thinking of him constantly. By engaging in Krishna consciousness, he does not feel the pangs of material miseries. This state of life is called Brahma Nirvana, or the absence of material miseries, due to being constantly immersed in the Supreme. Kama krodha vimuktanam yatinam yata chetasam abhito brahma nirvanam partite viditatmanam. Those who are free from anger and all material desires, or self-realized self-discipline and constantly endeavoring for perfection are assured of liberation of the Supreme in the very near future. As we'll see in the next two verses, there's a process of becoming Krishna conscious directly through knowledge of Krishna, namely that Krishna is the proprietor of everything, and that Krishna is the enjoyer, and that Krishna is the friend. And that is the indirect process by gradually going through the process of yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, dharana, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. Now, in this age, it's not practical to go through the indirect process because our minds are too agitated. But if we develop intelligence, spiritual intelligence, then gradually we're able to control the mind and senses by engaging the soul, ourselves, in Krishna consciousness. In other words, if we have intelligence that's what our desires should be focused on, then the soul voluntarily focuses his desires on things that bring him in contact with Krishna. By a mechanical process, we can desire to go through an indirect process of trying to control our senses through yama and niyama and asana, and then gradually try to control our intelligence and our minds through pranayama, of course, that's also on the sensual platform. But pratyahara, to get off the sensual platform, and then dharana, dhyana, and samadhi, which is all focusing the intelligence on the mental platform to control it to think about Krishna. So we can do that, and there is a mechanical process of doing that, transferring our desires from fruitive desires, from gross fruitive desires, to the fruitive desire trying to become Krishna conscious, trying to meditate upon Krishna. And sometimes if one is not in contact with devotional service, then even by such desires, one may wind up thinking oneself to be Krishna, identifying oneself as the super soul. But from the very beginning, we learn that actually we're Krishna's servant. And that's our philosophy, that there is a Krishna, and we're his servant, and Krishna is the supreme. He has a body which is made out of bliss, knowledge, and eternity. Now we ourselves, we're also made out of bliss, knowledge, and eternity. We're also conscious, but we're very tiny. We have a little bit of consciousness, a little bit of bliss, and a little bit of, well, we're eternal. We're just as eternal as everyone else. And therefore we accept that actually I'm not this, I shouldn't identify myself with this gross and subtle body due to my false ego. Instead, I should identify myself as dasa, dasa, anudasa. Which means that so many devotees, especially our acharyas, will give us directions how to fix the mind upon Krishna. They'll tell us about Krishna, and they'll tell us how to think about Krishna. So if we accept those directions, we accept that intelligence, we desire to utilize that intelligence to help us become conscious of Krishna, then Krishna will gradually reveal himself to us. In other words, if we properly utilize our intelligence to engage our senses, our mind, and our intelligence, if we properly utilize our desires and accept the right intelligence, the right directions, the soul has to do it. Because there's so many ideas floating out there. Many of the ideas are simply in the material realm, and we can debate about them. You know, where did the coronavirus come from? Did it come from Wuhan, or it came from a laboratory in America, or just, you know, came from some bat soup. We can discuss that and try and figure it out. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter where it came from in terms of our spiritual advancement. Of course, if we found out it came from bat soup, we'd probably confirm that next time I'm offered bat soup, I probably won't accept it. Even if there's some minuscule attraction for it, still I'll readily reject it. So it may serve some purpose, but generally speaking, at least in the Ljubljana temple, it's unlikely you'll be offered bat soup. So it's not very important for our spiritual advancement. On the other hand, the philosophy that teaches us how to accept intelligence which will help us make spiritual advancement, well, that will actually, if we accept that, then that will actually help us remember Krishna more. Because that's the point. As it says here, kama, krodha, vimukta, anam. So real liberation is if we get free from material conceptions, as it says later on. So our main material conceptions are that if I satisfy my material desires, and if you don't know what they are, just spend a couple of minutes and write down whatever you're thinking. And you can probably categorize a few of them as material desires. Kama, krodha, vimukta, anam. So to know that we should get free from these, and we just can't give them up. Because trying to give up material desire is also a material desire, usually speaking. One thinks of something, one is on Harinam, and he passes by a cake shop. And immediately the mind says, if you weren't so bound up by being here, if you were not so restrained from being on this Harinam party, if you could give up your false prestige, then you could go into the cake shop and somehow or another try to get a piece of cake. And even though the devotees will criticize you, you should be fearless. And not worry about your false prestige. For the sake of eating that piece of cake, you should be able to sacrifice anything. So then the mind thinks like that, and then you go, oh no, this is very bad, I'm afraid. You know, I'd really like to, but I can't do it because, you know, my false prestige. So this is all within the material realm, attachment and aversion. To think something is bad, oh no. And then to think it's bad, to think something is bad is also bad. Because anytime we forget about, anytime we get into the realm of mental speculation, which is called viyuta vikalpa, war against sense gratification, or vishaya sangara, or war against sense gratification and excessive speculation, then the result is that we just forget about Krishna. So we have to accept that intelligence that puts our mind upon Krishna. That we get a higher taste, in other words. Trying to give up lust and anger is just a waste of time without simultaneously trying to focus the mind upon Krishna. The reason why we give up lust and anger is not so we can become liberated from their problems. We give up lust and anger simultaneously by getting the higher taste of becoming Krishna conscious. Otherwise, generally the neophyte, when they're trying to give up lust and anger, become more attached to lust and anger. I shouldn't hate this devotee, although he did so many bad things to me, but now that I remember how many bad things they did for me, against me, then I probably have a good reason why I should hate them. But I shouldn't do that, but you know, actually, because I'm a good person, but I shouldn't be such a good person because, you know, this person is a bad person. And if I was a good person, I'd get rid of this bad person. So, excessive speculation. As soon as we come into the realm of the material energy, what's good and bad in the material world, the dualities, then immediately there's going to be desires for sense gratification and excessive mental speculation. On the other hand, if we simply put it aside, nirmanta eva, jnane priyasam udapasta namanta eva, this is Lord Brahma's advice. Give up the desire for excessive speculation. We're not going to solve anything by it. We're not going to make any progress. We're not going to do anything useful for ourselves and anyone else. Jnane priyasam udapasta namanta eva. And become a little humble. Yes, there are so many bad things going on in the material world. Yes, there's so much injustice. Yes, I should try, you know. But be a little humble and realize that we're not the super soul. We didn't come to this material world to solve all material problems. And nor can we solve any problems, except the real problem is that we've forgotten about Krishna. And because we've forgotten about Krishna, everything else is a problem. Jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadiya vardham. And therefore we should hear from the great devotees how to become Krishna conscious. Stani stita. There's no need to change anything. Whatever our duties are, whatever we can do to serve Krishna, we'll just do that. It doesn't matter if we're a man or a woman, or if we're the temple commander or the dishwasher. It doesn't really matter what we're doing. Just do it to please Krishna. Try to cultivate a sense of trying to please Krishna while we're doing this service. Then, shutikatam tanuvangma nobira. We should always remember what it says in scripture. We should see through the eyes of scripture. We should see how Krishna, as it will say here, that everything here belongs to Krishna. So I have nothing to gain. It doesn't matter whether I get into this imagination, this idea that something is mine, including this body. But actually it's not mine, it's Krishna's. And it's not meant, there's nothing I could do in this material world with this body that's actually going to make me happy. I may gratify my senses and get some temporary relief from the pushings of my senses and my mind, but that's not real happiness. That's simply temporary relief from the misery coming from lust, anger, and greed, and the delusion of my false ego. And that Krishna is a real friend. He's my friend. He's everyone's friend. And if I become an instrument for Krishna, then I'm acting for my own good and for everyone else's good. If I let Krishna do the driving, as they say in America, we let him take over, then I can actually be doing something good for myself and others. And Krishna takes over when we become, engage our body, mind, and words, and according to the directions of our acharyas and their representatives. Then when I'm absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then we're actually entering into the spiritual world. The more we're thinking about Krishna, the more our consciousness expands in Krishna consciousness, the more our mood develops into the loving service to Krishna, then the more I enter into the spiritual realm of existence, even while one is in the material body. And everything else that doesn't lead to that may, if we're advancing in the Vanashram system, at least we're doing things towards the mode of goodness, we're remembering at least to wash our hands before we eat, well, that's better than looking at them and saying, well, they look pretty clean. No problem. And then after we eat, then, you know, anyhow, there's a few bits left, but, you know, I might get hungry later. So it's not a bad idea. I'm not going to wash my hands. Besides, the sink is at least 15 yards, and I'm too tired to get up there. So at least we get up and we wash our hands before and after. We're making some advancement towards the mode of goodness. So that's better. But better than that is to try to see things in relation to Krishna. To remember that actually Krishna owns everything here, and I should utilize his energies, whatever I was in my sphere of influence, I should utilize it to please him. And that way I should be doing something beneficial for myself and everyone else. So that will be the conclusion of this chapter. And then the next chapter we'll get into will be about the perfection of the mechanical process, which will lead to the same conclusion. That is, yoginam api sarvesham madguten antaratmana sharvan labhate kamam sume yuktatmo mataha. That of all the yogis, one who is always thinking of me with great transcendental service, who's intimately united with me in yoga, is the highest of all. The yogi who's always thinking of me with great and transcendental love, is that? Who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, great faith, and always abides in me. So that's about the same thing. I think it's prema, or some kind of. The yogi who's always thinking of me with great and transcendental faith, always abides in me, renders transcendental loving service to me, thinks of me within himself and renders transcendental loving service to me, is most intimately united with me in yoga, is the highest of all. But then finally we'll get into the seventh chapter, beginning of the middle six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, where we just have to hear about Krishna. Now we think that just hearing about Krishna is just an ordinary process. I should be doing something more practical like pranayama, or maybe asana, or something like that. Just hearing about Krishna. I've been hearing about Krishna for so long, and I'm still in the material concept of life. Well, we have to have also faith. Maya asakta manak partha yogam yunjan marashaya asamshayam samagramam yata gyasisi tachino. In other words, asamshayam samagramam. Give up these doubts which arise from false ego. As long as we're attached to this false ego, as long as we won't let go, as long as we don't want to understand that we're actually souls, not bodies, then Krishna consciousness is very, very theoretical. Then whatever we're hearing about it sounds like a fairy tale. And that the reality we think is we're seeing behind, in front of us. This is the real world, where people eat and they sleep and they mate and defend. And this other world, who knows? The world of never, never land. And therefore we never can go inside, because anyone who has attached to their false ego and won't give it up, even for a moment, put it aside and become submissive, then they have to live in this world. Because they won't, they're, instead of Krishna being their dear, most intimate friend, their false ego is the thing that they're most attached to, that they just can't give up. People will sacrifice their lives in a battle. They'll give away all their wealth in charity. They'll go through great austerities, but they won't give up their false ego. It's all to serve their false ego. But if one can actually give up their false ego and identify themselves as Krishna's servant, then they're actually doing the greatest benefit for themselves and everyone else. They're the actual heroes of this world. But obviously it's not so easy to do that, especially all the time. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Hare Krishna. In the verse about giving up endeavors for the speculative process of knowledge spoken by Brahma, Srila Prabhupada translates this san mukharitam as hearing from the great realized devotees. So then how many of us can speak Krishna Katha, if it's only to hear from great, not only realized, but great realized, not only great, but also great realized devotees.
So how? Well, so let's say we're not great, and we're not realized, self-realized. But we have some realization, and therefore we can be as effective as we've understood the philosophy. So it's summarized, acharyamam vijaniyam navamanita karija, that an actual real acharya is one of those great souls, and they're either considered to be a personal associate of Srimati Radharani or a direct manifestation of Lord Nityananda, his mercy. But how many of, you know, that's an exalted personality. Now, on the other hand, we have Krishna, Shiksha Guru Keta Krishnara Sarup, Antaryami Bhakti Shrestha Seiduri Rup. That one should know the Shiksha Guru as a representative of Krishna. The Antaryami, the Super Soul, as well, the Bhakti Shrestha, the best of the devotees, he's a manifestation of that Shiksha Guru. The Prabhupada said in the purport that there are two kinds of Shiksha Gurus. One of them is the self-realized soul, the Vyamita to Krishna, who brings the spiritual world and tells you what Krishna wants you to hear. And he tells you with pure potency of Krishna consciousness. He sees everything objectively. But there's another kind of Shiksha Guru. He's followed the previous acharyas, and to some extent he's gotten some realization, some purification. He has some experience in Krishna consciousness, and he can tell us how to come at least to the point in the path towards Krishna that he's arrived or she's arrived. Now if we're on a lesser point or a previous point to that path that he's arrived, then he can give us guidance how to at least get to that path. So there's value. But the acharya, in the true sense of the term, was authorized to deliver Krishna, enriches the disciple with full spiritual knowledge, and thus awakens him to the activities of devotional service. So ultimately there's a difference, and Prabhupada therefore writes, these are things we have to know when we're dealing with devotees. Who's on what level? First of all, we should know who's on, interesting enough, our first business is to know who's on what level. Because it's much easier to figure out where others are at than it is to figure out where we're at. We're much more discriminating against dealing with others than we are with our own self. So our first business is to learn how to discriminate between who's on what level. And then after that, we should try to figure out what level we're actually on. If we don't do that, we're just lost. We're not going anywhere in devotional service if we can't do that. Then all we're doing is speculating. Of course, even if we try to do that, we're going to speculate less, that's all. We'll see more and speculate less. Now, Srila Prabhupada writes that Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakura has given us a hint to how to know who's actually an Uttama Adhikari, by one's ability to convert others into devotees. So that would be pretty easy. You just count the number of disciples someone has, and if they have a bigger number, they must be closer towards an Uttama Adhikari. But there's something called the quality of their disciples too. To actually convert someone to become a Vaishnava, first of all, you have to be a Vaishnava. And to be a Vaishnava is not so easy. One who's actually in love with Krishna. But we can see that the ability to help others on the path, the quality, you know, is also an indication who's at least approaching the higher levels of devotional service. The clearer the message, as in a conversation between Gopinath Acharya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he said, what is the proof that you've actually obtained the mercy of Krishna, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of the Lord? You remember what Gopinath Acharya's response was? Because I'm able to explain it. Because if, unless I was able to explain it, how could I get the... Without Krishna's mercy, I couldn't explain it. So, then Prabhupada said, one should not become a spiritual master unless he's obtained the stage of Uttama Adhikari. Then an intermediate devotee, a neophyte devotee, and an intermediate devotee could also make disciples, but such disciples should be on the same level, and it should be understood that they cannot advance very well due to his insufficient guidance. Therefore, one should be careful to accept an Uttama Adhikari as one's spiritual master. So we should be careful to not, even if we become an instructor to others, we shouldn't become deluded into thinking, you know, because I'm an instructor, therefore somehow or another that's made me more advanced. Actually, it's every possibility of puffing up our false ego and keeping us on the same level or degrading us. And others also may be deluded to thinking that because this person has a position, therefore he has the qualifications. It's like if I get elected to a position, that doesn't mean that necessarily I automatically acquire the qualifications of that permission, service or position. So one has to see things from many points of view. In other words, for the disciple, he should see the spiritual master as the representative of God. If he doesn't see that, then how can he give up his false ego? And before one takes initiation, one should be willing to accept the representative, the person I'm taking initiation from, as a representative of Krishna. If I don't, then it becomes meaningless. It's a waste of time because I won't give up my false ego. And without giving up our false ego, we just remain on the material platform. Devotional service doesn't begin until we give up our false ego. On the other hand, I should not think myself to be a great devotee just because I'm instructing. I'm acting as a media to some extent by repeating the words of the great devotees. And others, for instance, shouldn't become deluded either if they have a position of trying to help me advance in devotional service. For instance, my godbrothers, they shouldn't think because this person is, you know, has a particular position, therefore they're unapproachable. They can't be corrected. Or as Vaishyasika Prabhu gave one lecture, he said, "I live to be corrected." So that should be, the godbrothers and sisters should try to help the person, because otherwise they'll get lost. Because if they accept, which is bona fide, the position of an instructor, and they get, their followers have to worship them, have to respect them, or else they'll get zero from his instructions. The satisfaction of the self-realized person is a secret advancement in devotional service. So trying to satisfy those who are giving us knowledge is a secret of advancement. Otherwise we won't understand anything at all. And even so, one may not, from an objective point of view, be self-realized, but if they're acting as an instrument for Krishna, and anyone who's actually serving the instructions coming down in disciple succession, to one degree or another, are under the internal energy of Krishna. Because either we're serving Krishna's instructions, or we're serving Maya's instructions, or sometimes there may be a combination of both. But if I'm taking instructions from someone and I don't honor them and serve them appropriately, then I won't serve their instructions. If I don't serve the instructions, I don't make any advancement. Then the knowledge becomes useless. So we have to see things from any point of view, or else we get, you know, either you're a god or you're a dog. So that's one of the problems. Some of our devotees, they had the position of instructing and also initiating gurus, but somehow or another they weren't on the highest platform and they got bewildered. And many times, after they fell down, people just negated everything they told and did beforehand, which is just a mistake. When they're under the internal energy, whatever they're doing could be more or less perfect to some degree. But when they had difficulty, then what they're doing should not be emulated or followed. So either we could be in the spiritual energy and everything we're doing is perfect, but one moment we may fall down. So one should not criticize, or especially what people were doing right, what the devotees were doing right. We should appreciate what they were doing right and understand that when they get into difficulty, then they're being corrected by Krishna, so whatever they were doing wrong will be rectified, and therefore in the future they'll only do things right again. and the greatest methodology of advancement is to make someone humble. So after someone has some trouble and they become humble, then they make the greatest advancement they could probably possibly do under the circumstance. Samadhi, Bhama, Dhamma, Bhama, Himsa, Shana. Humility is the basis, and generally people lose their humility when they're put into too much, when they get too much praise and too much material resources, they become bewildered by it. So then when it's all taken away, then they become humble again, and they start making significant advancement again. Hopefully. Because some people, they get into difficulty and they blame everyone else for it. And therefore Krishna has to keep on arranging to eventually make them humble again. Anything else? Okay, yes.
This humility and discrimination, can you explain a bit more? Because it sometimes seems that the one who is humble won't bother to discriminate too much from whom to take orders. And I mean, how does it go together?
That's not humility.
Yeah.
That's foolishness. One is a fool, and many times he's humble too. Just like a Shudra is a fool, and he's usually humble. But if he's not humble, then he's a Mudha. But the Brahmin, when he has knowledge, he's genuinely humble. Because he understands I'm 1/10,000th the size of Tipperary's size, and Krishna is unlimited. And everyone else is acting somewhere or another as an instrument for Krishna. So he has no choice but to be humble. If you're 1/10,000th the size of Tipperary's size, and you realize it, it's really hard to become too proud. And if you realize there's a person who's everywhere, and he's unlimited, then, you know, comparison to him, one is insignificant, eternally. So where is the question of becoming proud? Is that right? And just humility, because someone's better than you, is better than being puffed up. But when there's a difference between that and realizing the person is actually better than everyone, then you're definitely going to be unlimitedly humble. You may realize that someone is better than you in something and become a little humble. But when you realize there's someone who is better than you in everything, better than everyone in everything, then you really become humble. Okay, thank you very much. Grandaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.